Hello, we are Angela Benjamin
and David J. Lilly,
and we are both jewellery designer makers who spend every day surrounded by shiny things.
We are both passionate about jewellery
and love learning all we can about jewellery making and sharing what we've learned with you.
Perhaps you're a jewellery lover or creative type, or spend your days at the bench like we do.
Whichever it is, we hope you'll enjoy our sparkling chit-chat, our silly stories, and our thoughts on living a creative and slightly dusty life.
With a few laughs along the way.
You can find our podcasts on all your favourite apps, including, of course, the biggies, Apple, Spotify, and Chrome Podcasts.
So if you want to know who we are and share our passion for all that glitters, then stay with us for the next 30-ish minutes.
This is
Ange
and David with Little Gems on Jewellery
and Life. Good morning, Ange, and I could say good morning now to you, and we're both at the same time zone.
Good morning, David. And how does it feel to be back in Blighty?
Feels jet lagged.
Wow.
We're still not sleeping correctly for this side of the pond, but we're getting there.
When did you land?
Thursday, and we're now Easter Monday. So yeah, we're still kind of staying up. We're staying up until about 2 a.m. because we still can't get to sleep. Type of thing.
Oh, bless! And how are your last days in? Was it L.A.?
Yes, via L.A. We came back to see my sister Debbie, and that was lovely. We spent a day kind of doing nothing, and the other day we went out. We went to the Griffith Observatory, which is on a promontory quite high above L.A. So you can see all the way across kind of the city to downtown and the sea. I had a really lovely kind of wander around there and peculiarly bumped into a family. Or rather, she tapped me on the shoulder and said, "Oh, look, you're not that hot." And I thought, what's she on about? And we were in this part of the observatory where they had the exhibition about radio waves. And where I was standing, there was an infrared camera that was on me. So it was showing what colour I was. So she said, "Yeah, you know, don't worry, you're not that hot here." And I said, "Oh, okay, fine." What, I didn't know what she's on about. She pointed up to this thing. And I said, "Oh, yeah, that's not as hot as I usually am." And she said, "Yeah, I know you Brits." And I kind of looked at her peculiarly. She said, "Yeah, I married one of your cast-offs." I thought, what's this woman going on about? She'd married an Australian, basically.
Right.
So I said, "Well, what's your excuse?" And she said, "Well, I'm Canadian." I said, "Oh, where from?" She said, "From British Columbia." And I said, "Oh, where in British Columbia?" She said, "Oh, you won't know. It's a tiny little town." I said, "Come on, where?" She said, "Salmon Arm." And I said, "We know Salmon Arm. We've just been staying in Salmon Arm." So there was Canada knocking on our door while we were standing in the Griffith Observatory in Los Angeles.
It's obviously calling you back. That's what it is.
Most definitely. So yeah, that was our last few days in LA, and a nice easy flight back on Virgin. And here we are back in West Sussex with, well, for me, lots of work to do now.
So what work have you got on?
Three commissions that I was working on before I left. The client all knew before I started them. They were unlikely to get finished before we left. I have a ring that is being made from a variety of other rings that the client had, set with two alexandrites. And this is a ring that is split ring. So it comes up across the top and splits across the finger at an angle, set with two trillion cut alexandrites that are approximately 7 mil across each. So they're quite large.
And have you cut them?
No, I've not cut those gems myself because they're regular cuts. So they're not, those ones I've bought. His husband is having a brooch that is based on my air collection. And we're putting two gems into that, one of which he had in a ring, which was a cabochon garnet. And we've had a round cut faceted garnet to go with it. That's being made in silver, but with the gold surrounding one of the gems. So the waxes have been done for both of these, and they now need to be cast. And then the last commission is another ring that was based on one of the other collections. Also got to cut the gems for that. I had put tourmalines in the original one. They wanted something that was different. They didn't want the tiny little stick tourmalines, and they've decided they wanted carnelian. So I had a lot of carnelian, so we selected pieces, and I'm now cutting and polishing those to shape to go inside. There's five of them to go in there, and I know I have three of them done, so I've got two more to do. And then I've done the wax already, and that could go to be cast as well. So those three need to be done. I've got a repair to do, that a ring that a lady had, she managed to snap the head off it. I don't quite know how, but so I've got that to do. I've got a necklace to finish off that I started, that the gems for it only arrived, for the actual string of the necklace only arrived in just before I left in December. So there's no time to finish that. And then I've got some other bits and pieces that I want to do, time willing, because we're only intending to be back in the UK until June. So I've got those to do. And then I've got two stained glass commissions to do as well. One is for an existing client who had a window back in 2007. They've moved house and they want another window, which is roughly the same shape and size, i.e. narrow and tall, but totally different things. Last time we depicted two mallards in a stream under a bridge. This time we are depicting cats and loaves of bread.
So do you draw the designs before you make them, or are they ideas that the client has and you just... Are these your designs of the cats and the loaves?
The client has sent me the kind of loaves that they'd like depicted.
Right.
And they've sent me photos of their cat. So I'm going to come up with a design based on that. And it's three different panels. We're not trying to sit a cat on a loaf or anything kind of quite like that.
You could see the way my mind was working, couldn't you?
A large cat chomping on baguettes or something. So I've got that to design. The other one is front door and side windows and transom, and they want something that's kind of quite geometric Victorian, quite traditional. So I've got those to do as well. So I'm going to be busy the next few months.
I love that you're working on such different scales as well, from, you know, the sort of small jewellery stuff and then these windows. I mean, which do you prefer? Or is there no preference? Does it depend on what mood you're in, what you'll work on? Obviously, it depends on what you've got, you know, what commissions you have, but you've got a mixture.
Sure.
At the moment.
I suppose there's no fear around making stained glass because I've been doing it for so long. And I've always done commissions for stained glass. It's very rare that I did stuff just for the sake of doing it. With the jewellery, when I'm doing commissions, there's a certain amount of fear that comes up because it's very specific. I'm making something to an agreed design with the client. I may be pushing myself when it comes to technique, things I wouldn't necessarily, you know, do that I've said yes to, because I do believe, I mean, like you, it's worth pushing yourself to, you know, to learn new stuff, create new stuff. So I'm always more comfortable with the stained glass commissions because I've been doing it for so much longer. I started doing stained glass as a hobby 23 years ago and turned it into business 2006. So I understand all the different things that go right and go wrong when creating a stained glass commission. Where I'm still learning, as you know, with jewellery, because there's just so much more to learn with jewellery making because there are so many different techniques. And that's not the case with stained glass.
And so, again, coming back to my question, I feel like I'm sort of challenging an MP here with something quite specific. Which do you prefer? My question, Mr. Linnick.
Well, Miss Benjamin, let me explain to you as clearly as I can. I have no idea.
Oh, that's good. But I love that you have that variety. I think that's really great.
Thank you. I like doing both. I get a great buzz out of doing both. I suppose one thing that is of benefit when working in the jewellery is once you've made it, you give it to the client.
Mm.
The stained glass, you've got to go and install it in their house as well. So that's always an extra thing, which not can go wrong, but it could be a pain because you're one thing you're doing with stained glass is you're making something that's square. You can't put it in someone's house, so the window frame isn't quite square, so you have to start chopping bits off of here, there and everywhere to just get the thing in. It's nothing's quite as straightforward as it could be when it comes to installing stained glass because the age of the properties that I'm normally putting them into.
I think that's covered it. I think you've covered my So now that you're back, is there anything that you've missed?
I've missed being in the studio. I've really missed being in the studio and, you know, being there. I mean, I've got some gems that are arriving, which I'm looking forward to seeing from Justin at Xander Cut Gems, I think it is. So I've got a large trillion cut something. Can't remember what it was. I think it was a tanzanite. And I've got a large oval cut aquamarine. So waiting for those. He's sending them out Tuesday, so I'll have them midweek. And hopefully I'll have some time to actually make something using those. So it'll be really nice to kind of get back, because even though I did some designing while I was over there, I just didn't feel the urge. I think we've discussed this already, to do a huge amount of designing. But I know when I've got the gems in front of me, there's some things that, you know, will come through and I shall start working on those. And also what I've missed, which I did do over there, was the teaching.
Okay.
I mean, I taught the stained glass, but didn't do any jewellery teaching. And so I've got a masterclass I'm running at Atelier in Brighton this coming Wednesday. So I'm demonstrating what it is that I'm making and the techniques that go into it. This is based on the Disco Dalek brooch from All the Glitters, because they've asked me to come up with something that reflects what I made on the show. So I've got 3 hours showing people the different techniques, what we're doing and how to do it. And then they come back the following week having forgotten everything I've shown them and make it themselves. Quite why we do it over 2 weeks, I don't know. It's not my business. They know what they're doing. But that's how that goes. I've got a lady coming in to do some wax carving, which would be fun to do with her. And I'm running some stained glass classes and running some ring making classes. So it'd be really nice to get back into my own studio and do these things as well.
It's great. It sounds like you've hit the ground running. Definitely. You've sort of literally off the plane and a list of jobs on the go. It's great.
But it's kind of fun. It's nice to be back, to be grounded in my workshop, but not at home, because obviously our homes are now rented out. So we're kind of staying in various places that we're renting or staying with friends until we then go back again.
Fantastic. Well, one thing that you mentioned that you were designing, and it came up in conversation in one of my jewellery classes last week, was a brooch for a man.
Yeah.
And one of my classmates, she said, oh, have you done any, I think she called them mooches. I said, what? But apparently there's a name for men's brooches. It's a mooch or a mooch or something.
Oh, really?
It, I've been thinking about for a while, because for me, I just think if a guy wants to wear a brooch, you wear a brooch. But having a gendered brooch, I love seeing men with brooches. I think it's a really nice addition to a suit and or a suit jacket. And you know, every time I've met you, you've had one on. And I'm toying with the idea of designing one for my other half, because he loves badges. He always wears various badges, but I think something slightly smarter would be nice sometimes. Yeah, and I read a really great article, I think it was in Stylist magazine recently, about the emergence of men's brooches and how they are much more prominent, and apparently at the Oscars so many of the younger actors were wearing brooches.
Is wow.
Something you've always worn, or only of late? Or
I started wearing them back in my 20s, because I moved from my hometown in Hertfordshire to London, and I discovered Christie's West Kensington. Christie's, for those who don't know, is an auction house. Once a month, they had an Art Deco auction. Back in the early 80s, Art Deco wasn't that expensive to collect. And so I used to go there and just see what was there. And if there were small items that were going for next to nothing, then I would buy it. And I bought a collection of Art Deco brooches. They were all in base metal, set with paste or just enameled and things, but there were about half a dozen in them. That's when I started wearing brooches, because I thought, these are really fun. And so I would stick them on coats and on jackets. And I suppose I've done it ever since.
Really? And I, as I said, I think it looks really smart. And for me, I've always loved badges as well. I think that's one of the things that bonds my partner and I. I love a badge. A lot of his are, you know, might have something vaguely political. For me, it's that kind of connection to childhood a bit as well. But I think a brooch is a step up, yep. And it's more you're expressing yourself. If you don't, you know, if you don't necessarily want to wear a chain or earrings or whatever, it's that bit of bling on an outfit that is understated. And do you find that you're getting more guys coming to you wanting commissions for brooches?
No, I think the most things that commission wise are still rings.
Okay.
It's interesting. Last year, the ACJ, the Association for Contemporary Jewellery, did an exhibition which is still touring, which is all about brooches. And that was interesting. I mean, I didn't take part in it because I didn't realize it was going on. Somehow it kind of missed me by, I don't know about you, until the whole thing was there and ready and done. But that was interesting to see the different brooches that were in there. And there are brooches that could be worn by anybody.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, the majority of them, I wouldn't say have a feel of being, you know, male or female in their styling. They were very organic in that. I mean, there's so many different styles, but also I think a man could feel as comfortable wearing the vast majority of them as a woman could.
Yeah.
Or, you know, there was nothing that said, this is a gender-focused piece of jewellery.
No, I agree. And I think that's the thing with any sort of jewellery, really. It depends on the style of the wearer and the confidence of the wearer. You know, if someone feels that they can wear that big ostentation brooch or ring or whatever, go with it. You know, it's what you're wearing.
And I think it's interesting, not that I've met a huge number of people who are non-binary, but they seem to be showing the way in what can be done in so many areas of fashion. And jewellery is just another one of them, where they will happily wear simply what they want. And it might be as subtle or as outrageous as they particularly want to have on. The discussions I've had with the few that I've met, there's no feel of no, why shouldn't I? It's like, this is what I want to wear. This is an expression of me. And I think men in particular have been told that jewellery is not a way to express who they are, unless it's maybe cufflinks or a tie pin, you know. And I think, I see jewellers still making cufflinks, but I see very few of them making tie pins these days.
No, that's true. Actually, a tie pin, I wouldn't have even thought of. I must admit, when I first started making, I did make cufflinks and they seem to sell quite well, and I've made a few for commissions. But I've yet to have a man's brooch commission. So yes, I think I will definitely think more about the style of brooch that I make, which I think on the whole, my brooches aren't particularly gendered. But I'd like to appeal to people who just have a really entrenched sense of style, as opposed to appealing to a gender.
I think that's personally the way to go, in that it's make jewellery that expresses who you are. It doesn't necessarily fit into, it should be pigeonholed for this or that.
No, that sounds good. Yeah, well, so apart from thinking about brooches, making mooches or whatever they will be called, I've been doing lots of polishing. So at the moment, I'm working on finishing the pieces for my collection, for my scholarship. Nearly all of the pieces have been made, come to be assembled, in that I'm having some castings made in 14 karat gold for some gemstones that I had cut. Those castings have to be attached to the pieces. So one of the pieces is a ring, an earring, or actually there is a pendant as well. Mm-hmm. And then I've got those stones. But yes, it's mainly been doing lots of polishing, trying to get rid of fire stain. I don't know if you've had any battles with fire stain on your silver before.
One thing that somebody said to me, and I'm always so nervous about it, is if you've got a lot of fire stain and it just doesn't want to come off, put it in the pickle overnight, but leave the pickle cold.
Right.
Hot pickle will start to warm pickle will really start to destroy the silver and eat it completely. You might end up with a different shape than you put in. But if you put it in cold pickle overnight, that often is the way for it to really lift all the fire stain and get it off.
Well, one thing I am looking forward to, which hopefully should help me with my polishing dilemmas, I signed up to the gold polishing guru, Stephen.
Oh, okay. Then goldsmith.
So I'm doing that in May, which I'm looking forward to. So that should hopefully give me some more insight. But I've been looking at various ways of trying to polish and finish, but my aesthetic anyway isn't super shiny. So going to be using that to my advantage, and also doing various kind of mattifying finishes on my pieces, which I think works with the designs that I've put together. But I'm quite excited that I'm getting to the end of it. A little bit apprehensive on how they'll be received, not necessarily by the wider public, because I don't know how soon they'll all see it, but more so my immediate peers. We're having an exhibition in the beginning of June as part of the course, so my pieces will be on display in Morley College, so that will be interesting. Yes, definitely come along, you'll be getting an invite.
Hopefully it'll be the very beginning of June, otherwise I'll miss it.
No, it literally is the first week in June, so hopefully you will still be around, because that would be great. And then last week, I also, as part of my scholarship, I've been assigned some business mentors. So
you were saying,
jewelry industry. A month before, I met one of them, who is a very established jeweler who specializes in particularly wedding rings, engagement rings. And then last week, I met the owners of a very nice jewelry shop in Barkenwell, head of EC1 Jewelers. It was really good to meet people who have been in the industry for a long time. And aside from actually owning their own jewelry shop, one of them is a jeweler. So getting their input on my business, so eyes on my business from general aesthetic. But the main thing that they sort of focused in on was my pricing. And it was a bit like being brought up in front of the head teacher and not told off, but sort of given quite an objective guideline for how I should be marketing my business and pricing my business. And I came away feeling really good, but also feeling, damn, I've got a lot to do. And also, again, a bit apprehensive about how it's going to be received by my client base. But it was good. And I think, you know, if anyone gets the opportunity to have those sorts of eyes on their business, you've probably had something similar through doing committed. That would be, you know, really advantageous.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm assuming that one of the things they told you is that you're not charging enough for your work. And how did that feel?
Initially, it felt, I guess to a degree, I always knew a bit that I was undercharging. Then I felt a bit silly, like, oh God, what am I doing? I'm supposed to be running a business here. I should be doing better. Then I felt, oh, actually, someone's validating that my work is good enough that I should be charging more for it.
Mm-hmm.
The spectrum of emotions over quite a short space of time. But yeah, now I'm sort of tasked with actually actioning it, which the first thing was doing stuff like Excel spreadsheets, which you very kindly introduced me to. Something different, and that sort of totally freaked me out. But, you know, they were very insistent, and said it felt like being told off by the headmaster. But it is really a way of looking at what you do from a time point of view, what you put into it, what comes out of it, and what you should be charging for it. So yeah, that's where I'm at the moment. So I've spent the best part of 2 weeks partly doing Excel spreadsheets and partly procrastinating doing Excel spreadsheets. It took me way longer than it should have. But yes, I'm going to be actioning it live as of next month.
Fantastic. Well done.
How do you find things like pricing? I'd imagine you're quite good at it.
I just basically took what I'd done in the stained glass business and kind of tweaked it to the jury, which was, you know, cost of materials, cost of time, i.e. how much do you want to charge yourself out at per hour, and then, you know, put on the actual profitability. Mm-hmm. Now, it's interesting, and I'd done it one way, and then I was a member of the Jewelers Academy for a while, which I know you were as well. And one of the things they had was they had their own spreadsheet on how to actually cost jewelry. And so I compared what they'd done with what I'd done and discovered I was undercharging. So I used their formula. And then each year I have put my rate per hour that I charge myself out at when making jewelry up. I'm still not up anywhere near what I charge for stained glass. It's a different business. I know I can charge a lot more for my time in stained glass because it's a different market. There are fewer people working in it. And also with the jewelry, I didn't feel that, I mean, I was starting doing stained glass. I was charging a third per hour what I charge now. With jewelry, again, I didn't feel confident that my work was worth a huge amount to start with because I was just learning. So the amount per hour I was charging myself was quite small compared to what I could earn with stained glass. And slowly that's coming up. And also the other thing that they said, I think it was Jewelers Academy said, was if you're working in gold or platinum, you should be charging more per hour than when you work in silver, because it is a more precious material and therefore it deserves to earn you more money. So it's been interesting to see. And also I did a lot of interrogating how much people are prepared to pay for things. But, and it's interesting, in the UK, we are nationally prepared to pay less for silver than in other parts of the world.
Interesting.
In North America in particular, first of all, in North America, they often sell items that are not solid silver, simply as silver, and they can get a lot more money for it than we can for sterling silver in the UK. So they may have something that is a base metal, brass, or even copper base that is then gilded, or rather, you know, silver or gold, whatever. And they'll charge as much as if it's something that you might be making in the UK using solid sterling silver. There is a different perception of value for silver over there than there appears to be over here. And also, the one, my kind of trick if you can call it that, for getting people into seeing value is to add gold. But I do it obviously through doing gold plating onto part of my work. I did contemplate Khumbu, and obviously the value of gold in Khumbu is higher than plate because it's thicker than the normal kind of plating that you put on. But Khumbu didn't give me what I wanted in the way of how I wanted my pieces gilded. Now I could move on to replacing that gilded silver with working in gold, so that the pieces are gold and silver. It's something I may well do in the future. But the pieces that are made with gold, I also charge for the time that I'm gilding something. So I'll charge that out at the same rate as I am for making, because as far as I'm concerned, it's as important. And obviously I charge for the gold plates as well. So that's a procrastinated answer.
Well, no, I think you covered it. And it is, even though there are objective ways that you can measure it, a lot of it is down to also your confidence as a maker, your experience as a maker, what you think your market could potentially pay. But I think generally we do undervalue our skills and ourselves. And I think it was quite good for me to have someone actually point that out to me in quite an objective way, outside of the experience that I have.
One of the arguments that you had on All the Glitters, and I know Jack would agree with this, is that we were all telling him in particular that he was underpricing his work because he wasn't actually doing any real costing of the work he was doing.
Right.
And so he was making lots of sales, but he was simply turning over cash. He wasn't actually making any real profit on what he was doing. So thankfully, he's now pushed his prices up more. Still think he could push his up further, but that's his choice.
And I think it can be a gradual thing as well.
Yes.
As you feel uncomfortable doing it, you will do it. And also seeing that all people are accepting of it.
Definitely. Yeah. And talking about the cost of things, I think it's time we should be moving on to who we're talking about.
Yeah.
Zeva, do you want to go with your one first, or shall I?
I think I will go with the gold polisher. So he is Gold Polishing Guru, the top of my head, on Instagram. Because I'm doing this course, and also I've messaged him a couple of times just with inquiries, and he's been really lovely. And I didn't realize he had probably has lots of people pinging in his inbox, but he said he particularly liked my message because I was nice and polite and said, hello, how are you, first of all? So there's a tip. If you wanted to get responses from people, myself included, when you're popping into DMs, always be polite and say hello rather than just lurching in with a question.
Absolutely. And it's Stephen Goldsmith, isn't it, is his name?
Yeah, I'm just looking up now, and he is Gold Polishing Guru. That's all in lowercase. And so that would be at Gold Polishing Guru. And he's Stephen M. Goldsmith, and he's a master gold polisher.
So my one, funnily enough, is another Stephen.
Why?
And you'd think we'd coordinated on this, but we didn't.
Weird.
Yeah, absolutely. So I was going to go for something blingy, and this is Stephen Tyler, the designer.
Yeah.
Stephen with a V, Tyler, T-Y-L-E-R, the designer. And he cuts gemstones as well on making jewellery, and it's his gemstones that I'm interested in. He will take cut and faceted gems and rework them. And so you get these things that have the most amazing kind of rose cuts and kind of slices into them. It's absolutely incredible gems. I mean, some of them are just bonkers. He has one that is still for sale. Let's see if I can find it. That is a very big piece. Where is it? Of something yellow. And I think, is it just a citrine? It's difficult. I should have kept this up on my phone so I could talk about it, but it was just over $12,000, you know. But when you look at the gems he cuts and the interesting cuts he puts into them, they are just beautiful. The kind of thing that'd be really fun to use is, you know, obviously just one big statement piece.
Yeah.
So check out his feed. It's, I mean, he does have jewelry on there as well, but it's the actual gems and the interesting, intriguing cuts that he puts into them, or carving it, you know, into the underside, that really interests me. He's got one here, this 28.5 carat Oregon sunstone, which just has all these geometric circles that intertwine underneath. Just incredible. So yeah, Stephen Tyler, the designer, or is his Instagram feed. So that's my one for today.
Fantastic.
We're done.
Great to have you back.
You too. And I will see you soon.
All right. Take care, lovely.
You too. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed the episode and come back to us in another couple of weeks for the next one. In the meantime, also thanks to Alfie Amadeus for the amazing track Octopi, which has our theme music. See you soon. Bye-bye.